Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freund, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Listen.
What's up, Super Ninfriendos? Joining me today on NVC are Brian Altano.
Hello, Lily, Super Ninfriendos.
Lily Zaldivar.
Hello again.
And a special surprise for longtime NVC fans, the return, the triumphant return of Casey DeFreitas.
Yay! Hello.
Yay!
I like the new term. Can I steal it?
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
You can take it and just run with it. Hare loves it. He thinks it's the best. Little
it is
intro.
Great.
It is 2021 the year that we actually see a Switch Pro? The 2020 success of Switch says no, but some experts think, yeah, they think we might. A legendary Nintendo designer has retired after 32 years. Monster Hunter Golden Amiibo are coming to Japan. And the biggest Nintendo news of all, of course, is that Casey is back to work. And we are very excited. That means that this is my last time as the permanent temporary host, as we will be having a peaceful transfer of power. And if you will indulge me, I have prepared a statement. And this is very corny, but I would like to read it because I think you're all so cool and awesome. I just want to say
statement.
Thank you to everyone who supported me in my tenure as permanent temporary host. It's been so incredible to see so much support online where usually there's nastiness. For those of you who hated me as a host, thank you for your patience. I think I speak for everyone when I say how happy I am to have Casey back at full health. I wrote full health, and now I realize it's like 85%, but still, it's important. Casey's back to take her rightful place as the host. It sounds very corny to say this, but the temporary gig is the realization of a dream I had when I was listening to this very same podcast, applying coats of varnish to rich people's boats in a freezing cold building all those years ago, or doing lap after lap on a commercial lawnmower in the blistering July sun. My position here at IGN as the executive editor of commerce is incredibly fulfilling. And also, I'm like very good at my job. but when I'd listen to podcasts like this one, or even like further back to shows like One Up Yours on the One Up, rest in peace, One Up, I would dream of someday being on the panel of one of those shows with my own jokes and my own observations about gaming and culture surrounding it. So this has been the realization of fantasies I had to keep myself sane while my soul was being ground down by unfulfilling job after unfulfilling job. So I want to say thanks to all the Super Ninfriendos who supported me. I want to thank everyone on this panel and panels past, and everyone at IGN for letting me just be an excitable Nintendo guy. And Casey, I want to thank you for giving me this one last chance to host the show. So let's get on with it, shall we?
Great work, Seth.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That was so good.
You're not quitting. I mean, you'll be back.
You'll still be on the panel.
I will say
you're not leaving.
Thank you for everything you did. It was a blast. We can't wait to have you host again the next time one of us doesn't feel well. And thank you for the peaceful transition of power. And thank you for coming to Casey's inauguration. You could have been a huge baby about it and not showed up.
Make a meme of it, of me just sitting verbally in my chair.
Seth, I could not have asked for a better permanent temporary host for all of our Ninfriendos that watch NBC each week. So thank you. And I appreciate you taking this last week to host so I can get back into the swing of things.
Yeah, well, it's my pleasure. I'm enjoying myself quite a bit. Now we're going to talk about Nintendo. We're not going to talk about me anymore. As much as I love that subject and I'm an expert on it, I also love to talk about Nintendo. Is 2021 the year of the Switch Pro? Rumors continue, as they always do, since like maybe 10 minutes after the Switch released, that we're going to get an updated model. And IGN, where we all work, except for, well, Lily, former IGN. It's like when you're in the Marines, you're always a Marine. We asked several analysts what they think. Sirkan Toto, I'm so bad with pronouncing names, of Kantan Games. Kantan said, quote, "I think a Switch Pro will come in the second half of 2021, end quote. So there's one in the maybe pile. Michael Pachter, who everybody knows from Wedbush Security, said, "I would err on the side of no for this year." David Cole of DFC Intelligence said, "Nintendo can accomplish a lot just by making minor tweaks." So I ask this, I think, every show. Panel, are we getting a Switch Pro this year? Casey, I would like to hear from you. What do you think?
As much as I would love a Switch Pro this year, specifically a special edition Monster Hunter version Switch Pro, so I can upgrade from my original launch day Switch that is falling apart and feel good about it, you know, probably not until the end of the year. And the biggest reason I'm saying that, and of course, Nintendo has duped us before, but Doug Bowser, the big boss at Nintendo of America, straight up shot that notion down in December, didn't he? Just said, yeah, it's not happening. Why would we do that when we're selling so well with just the regular Nintendo Switch and Switch Lite?
Yeah,
and he's got a point.
In a way that like maybe left a little bit of interpretation there. You know, very corporate. But no, you're right. They have said that like, no, we're not going to do it. Lily, what do you think? Are we getting a Switch Pro this year? I mean, I think inevitably we are, but
inevitably, I just don't think it's this year. I don't think it's the holiday either. Cause I think at this point they're going to be fine making revenue on the games that have been delayed and pushed out, that there's really no point in making a new console, especially with the sales from the last year. I just don't see it happening in 2021, maybe 2022. But I just think it would be a bit unfair that they're releasing the like red and blue Nintendo Switch that's just coming out. Some people are going to purchase that as their first Switch or maybe their second one to replace the original one. So why would they do that and then just 6 months later release the like Switch Pro. I think it'd be a bit unfair.
Right.
And not a good marketing strategy.
No. Brian, what are you thinking?
I think I agree with everyone. Nintendo doesn't seem like they've ever been in the sort of arms race for, you know, the most powerful console. And it doesn't necessarily seem like the current iteration of the Switch is holding back their vision in any meaningful way. Obviously, we saw with, you know, the recent Hyrule Warriors Zelda game, like things got a little choppy. That definitely could have been, that could have benefited from being on some slightly better hardware. But all in all, it doesn't really seem like they're looking at their current model and going, oh, we're totally screwed here. We can't make any of the games we want to make. We're not selling anything. Like they're kind of firing on all cylinders. And I think the general audience doesn't really seem to care. If you look at their best-selling games, none of them were really ones that could have benefited significantly from more power. Like Animal Crossing, no one was like, I really wish I could see, like, you know, Tom Nook's individual mustache hairs here.
I need those mustache textures.
Yeah. I'm all for seeing Tom Nook's individual mustache textures, for the record. But I don't know if we need to see them this year, right? Like, it's doing well. I think it's going to be something like, if you look at, like, Metroid Prime 4, when we eventually see that come out, if that's the kind of game that's, like, really, you know, shooting for the sky in terms of graphical fidelity and power and stuff like that, then that's worth talking about. But right now, like, it's a console for Nintendo first parties and indie games, and then, you know, like weird cloud versions of Hitman and stuff. So
right. Yeah, I've you know, I've always been pretty sure that they're going to be a Switch Pro, and I am almost certain it won't be this year, but I got to thinking about it. In fact, I mentioned this on Twitter. I'm actually starting to think that they're not going to release a Switch Pro because it's Nintendo. They're going to throw us a curveball, and it's going to be some like very weird, like a vertical, like a one-handed console that emits pleasant smells.
So like what they did with the like 3DS, but they made the 2DS that was like the two screens and it never folded. And then,
yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. It was just
that was such a weird console, man. Like,
what was that, Casey?
I said, give us the Nintendo Switch Wedge.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. My son still has his 2DS because those things are absolutely indestructible. That's why we got it for him. Like, look,
the Nokia.
We threw it overboard and, you know, hired some divers or some dredgers to bring it back up from the seafloor, and the thing still finds on. That's not really what happened. But the biggest reason we're probably not going to get a 2021 release is our next story, which is Nintendo Switch accounted for 87% of all consoles sold in Japan in 2020. 87% of all consoles in a whole country.
Nintendo does what Nintendo does.
Insane. That was 6 million units sold in Japan alone.
Oh my God.
Wii U lifetime sales is what, 13 million?
They also had the 10 best-selling software titles recently were all Nintendo. Like, they're completely dominating there. And it's fascinating to see because it's not really something I think that, like, a massive influx of supply from the PS5 could really turn around at this point. Like,
yeah,
the Switch is just nestled into Japan in the same way, you know, the DS, the 3DS, and like it just fits there. I remember going there and just seeing Nintendo handhelds everywhere on the train, and it was surreal. It's like it's just really, really cool to be like, oh yeah, like this has a significant cultural impact here. All walks of life, all age groups are playing this thing everywhere they go, and that's really, really cool to see.
Yeah, that was 3.9 million just normal Switches and 2 million. Hold on a second. This math isn't adding up. Oh, yeah, it is. That's 5.9. They just rounded.
I mean, 0.1 million is still like a lot.
That is true. I would love it if someone gave me $0.1 million. Still a heck of a lot of money. That's that's a lot of Nintendo Switches. That was 50% of all boxed game sales in 2020. Casey, do you have any thoughts about the dominance, the absolute utter dominance of the Nintendo Switch?
Well, it's crazy. I know. I remember we were talking about this in October because the Nintendo Switch was the best-selling console, I think, every month for the year worldwide.
Yeah, 24 months straight. Yeah.
And I said that I thought it would continue its streak, but I remember people reminded me that the new Xbox and PlayStation were coming out in November. So of course, Nintendo, people would be buying those and not the Nintendo Switch. But it turned out that wasn't true. And it's probably because there wasn't enough supply. And that was probably also because of COVID. We just blame everything on COVID. So I guess I'm not sure whether Nintendo would have still taken that crown for that month if the supply wasn't an issue, but maybe in Japan it still would have.
That's actually a really good point. I've been kind of thinking about that for a long time. I was like, if the competitors sort of shot themselves in the foot. But I think that the main thing that Sony and Microsoft did to help the Switch was to tell everyone you don't really need to buy these consoles right now because most of the games work on your last gen console. Mm-hmm. And like you compare that to the Nintendo Switch, which is a system that is, hypothetically in the middle of its life cycle and completely hitting its stride. Like every single game they put out there on the first party front sells millions. You know, you're still seeing a lot of success with third party stuff. You're seeing Wii U ports that still chart in the top five on NPD. Like, you know, even stuff like Pikmin 3, like had its, best franchise debut ever in Japan. Like there's a lot of really cool stuff happening there. And I think if you're going to jump in this year or last year, you're getting into a system that has dozens and dozens and dozens of great games. And whereas you look at the PS5 and you're like, well, first of all, this is impossible to buy. And second of all, it really only has a couple of exclusive games at launch. I love my PS5. I loved playing Demon's Souls and Miles Morales and stuff like that. But I think for the average person, they look at the Switch's price tag, they look at the library, and they go, this is something I can comfortably jump in on knowing that I can keep this around for a long time and I'll get a lot of use out of it.
Yeah, and the Nintendo has such more broader appeal. Like everybody knows about the PlayStation 5, everybody knows about the Series X, but the Nintendo just appeals to me. We were at like this local store the other day, and I don't know how the subject came up, but the woman behind the counter was like, my son was off of school and she asked him what he was doing. And he said he'd been playing video games. She's like, oh, I got a Switch. She's like, I don't normally like video games, but I got me a Switch. She's like, I play that thing all the time. It's so much fun. So yeah, it's like people who don't buy video games buy the Nintendo Switch and fall in love with it. And that's a huge driver of its success. I would also argue that the Nintendo Switch being $299 and the PlayStation 5 being $499 and same with the Xbox is a massive driver of people to the Nintendo Switch. But Lily, do you have any thoughts?
I mean, I was thinking about it from a consumer perspective because I did purchase a PS5 and I think I bought it in November and I think I've played it I don't play it every day. I play it maybe like once a week or I'll stream, anime on it. But to play video games, like I don't play as many video games because most of my friends will be like, oh, let's play Splatoon or let's play Mario Kart or let's play like games that involve people. Because I think at this point, for my friends who are very Switch based, they go to the Switch, they go to those games because they're very familiar. They're very friendly. They're very user friendly for everybody. And I think even my roommate, when COVID first started, she couldn't get a regular Switch. So she got a Switch Lite and she was like, I just want to play like Animal Crossing. I just want to like connect with my friends and be able to talk. And I think that helps it. And then also the fact, like you said, the PS5 and Xbox, like they said, oh, you don't have to purchase it because you can play on the old gens. And it's like, yeah, that's also a driving factor. Like the Switch, it's like, where else are you going to play those games? It's the Switch or the Switch Lite. So I think I don't know, 2020 COVID and just like the Switch itself just kind of set it up for success in the best way.
I was going to add to that, like weirdly, the sort of philosophy behind the Switch being this, two-pronged attack on consoles and handhelds, I think helped a lot because I don't know about you guys, but my Switch isn't a handheld as much as it used to be because I'm not traveling. I'm not really going anywhere as much. Mm-hmm. But keeping it docked and just having a Nintendo console hooked up to my TV with the ability to pick it up and, go lay on the couch or whatever is really awesome. I actually anticipated it would have sold less during COVID because it's not seen as much of a handheld. But that didn't really matter because Animal Crossing was there and, That carried that system. Ring Fit, for the fact that it wasn't a handheld anymore, it was also suddenly like a home exercise machine when people were looking for that more than ever. So it's really smart that Nintendo has all these kind of plates spinning in the air. People always want them to be like one thing, you know, they're like, make a mature Zelda, or like, you know, you make baby games and all this other crap. But the idea that they are so many things to so many people, that you can play, you know, Animal Crossing as a casual player, you can play, you know, Breath of the Wild Master Mode as a hardcore player, you can use it as an exercise machine, it's a, you know, something you travel with, or it's a home console. I think it makes them sort of weatherproof in terms of like anything that the world gets thrown at it, it's going to find some. Nintendo's always found some way to be resilient, and I think that's really wonderful to see.
Yeah. I'm starting to think this company's got power.
Yeah, you know,
they've always had the power. We just have been denying that right. On a consistent basis. That's why they have Doug Bowser. You know, Bowser.
Mm-hmm.
That's big brain energy.
I see that. Well, moving on, we're going to talk about the man who created Captain Falcon, Fox McCloud, Majora's Mask, and more, as retired from Nintendo. Takeya Imamura was a Nintendo artist and designer. He retired after 32 years with Nintendo. So that means he started when? He started 32 years ago. Once again, I'm not going to do the math on the spot. He's responsible for designing the mask in Majora's Mask, which is okay. That's kind of huge. It's one of the most recognizable icons in all of like video games. And, you know, nobody can deny what that is. It's not written here, but he also designed Captain Falcon. And I was reading, I don't know if you guys remember when the Super Nintendo Classic came out, Nintendo on its website had like a series of interviews with people who worked on Super Nintendo games. And Captain Falcon was originally designed to be the mascot of the Super Nintendo.
Really?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't either. And then he explains, he's like, that's why he's blue, yellow, and red, because those were the colors of the controllers. And he was going to be the mascot. And how different would Super Nintendo be if they're like, hey, it's me, Captain Falcon, and I want you
to play that's Super Nintendo. It's so weird.
Another like big thing that he did for Nintendo was he drew all the sprites for the vehicles in F-Zero, which are also like amazing and one of my favorite Super Nintendo games. But originally they had wheels, they were just like space cars just driving around, and he's like, whoa, let's make these into hover vehicles. And I mean, can you imagine?
So much better.
It's so much better than those weird little, like, I don't even know what, spaceships with just wheels just driving around.
Yeah, that would have been really boring.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been. I mean, and it's kind of hard to build on that, this futuristic racer that, you know, eventually is doing loop-de-loops if they're, you know, they got to.
If they have wheels.
Change a Goodyear tire, yeah.
I mean, Sonic doesn't. He has legs, so.
That is true. Oh, man. Okay, yeah, but Sonic has frictionless shoes that he was given by somebody.
So still sci-fi.
Exactly.
His legs kind of turn into wheels if you like the, you know,
he turns into a wheel. If you push down, he goes.
I don't want to talk about this anymore. This is deeply upsetting.
I'm sorry.
Well, he made obviously an enormous impact to like video games and
Sonic, or
that's exactly what I said. That was Sonic. Sonic did.
They did. He did. Yeah.
Sonic did. Sure. The first three Sonic games were kind of a big deal.
And they made a movie out of him last year.
They made a movie that was the last movie that my family saw in the theaters. And
shout outs to Sonic.
Last thing I'll say about Sonic is it's no, like the Super Nintendo and Genesis, like the whole thing was like Sega was like, we have blast processing, which meant that like their everything they could do was faster. So it would have been really weird if Nintendo was like, well, we have a race car driver mascot
named Captain Falcon.
Yeah, like that totally wouldn't have checked out.
What's that, Casey?
Oh, I was just going to say, I did look it up, but oh my gosh, Imamura started at Nintendo in 1989, but his first game he worked on was F-Zero in 1990, which was the year he's born. So he has officially worked at Nintendo longer than I have been alive.
Same. <That's>,
wow. But I also thought it was interesting. So I had no idea about this before, but Imamura came up with the name for Majora as well, and it came from a combination of his name and Jumanji. Why Jumanji? I don't know. I guess he was a fan of that movie.
Great Robin Williams film. It's fun. Everybody's having a good time.
When did Jumanji come out?
Xbox to come out in 1990.
Early 90s?
Yeah.
Early 90s. Oh, yeah, then that would have worked. He's like, big fan. I'm going to call it Majora's. That's a good legacy, though.
My name and yeah, that's really cool.
And he designed the mask.
Well, we thank you for all your hard work.
Mr. And for Tingle.
And for thank oh you my for God, that's right. That's the other thing. The other big
thank
thing.
You for Tingle.
Thank you for Tingle. He created
that abomination.
Tingle's wonderful. Let us not forget how much he helps you out in Wind Waker, giving you maps and stuff. He's a friendly little sprite boy who flies around and helps you navigate the seas. I guess they're not maps. I'm sorry. They're charts if they're nautical. He also designed the Star Fox 2 cover art for the Super Nintendo Classic.
I was hoping you were just going to keep doing
it. I mean, Tingle did also give you maps in Majora's Mask, but do you think Imamura came up with his catchphrase?
Wait, what is that?
The thing that means absolutely nothing.
I just kind of want to hope so.
Imagine you close into a meeting like, all right. Within,
the guy named Majora's Mask after Jumanji and himself. So I think he might have been responsible for coming up with Tingle's catchphrase, because he also came up with Tingle. This guy's great.
I'd like to imagine he goes into these meetings coming up with ideas, and he's like hoping they get turned down, and then they don't. And he's like, well, guess this is in the game now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Norman Tingle's Gosh catchphrase. That gonna be
when
in
he
the
was
game.
On, when he was writing for Saturday Night Live, they would like pitch the most absurd sketches just to like irritate everybody. And sometimes they would get picked up and
approved.
I want to know which those were.
Oh yeah, I have to look that up, but I think
that's the secret, though. You have to pitch like your craziest ideas, and then know that like three steps removed from crazy is the one you really want to do. And then people go, "That's too much. Let's bring it back to here." And you're like, "That's right where I want it to be."
Oh, damn! Nice. Brian's professional.
Yeah, I've also had like a lot of managers who are like, "I don't get it," and I'm like, "Well, here's an idea." The weird thing about Tingle is that he got his own game. It was like it was basically a balloon fight remix, basically, where Tingle.
This year, I decided I actually wanted to like follow hockey a little bit more than just the most casual of casuals. So I subscribed to a service that streams all of the NHL to your television. The Boston Bruins home opener, I went to watch it, and boom, blackout restrictions apply, which I thought was kind of ridiculous because I'm still 200 miles away from Boston, but whatever. Had I had NordVPN, that wouldn't have been a problem. I would have just gone in, changed my settings to another geographic area, and boom, I could have been watching all the Boston Bruins home games like it was nothing at all. So now I have NordVPN, and I can watch the home games of my local teams streaming without being frustrated. It's the same thing with like Netflix. It has all these complicated licensing rules, which from one country to another don't really make sense. So something you could watch on South Korean Netflix, you won't be able to watch on the United States Netflix, unless NordVPN, boom, switch to South Korea, and you're watching whatever Korean drama that you want. I highly recommend you do that. I haven't done it myself, but people seem to enjoy them. And who am I to try to bring down people's enjoyment? NordVPN, more than just entertainment and sports availability, it's going to protect you, especially when you're traveling, when you're using public Wi-Fi. People are trying to get in there. They're creeping on you. Bad actors, people trying to steal your password, your bank account details. Who knows what the government's doing these days? I can't keep track. They're all over the damn place. NordVPN, it's going to protect you. It's going to protect up to 6 devices, because I know you have at least that many devices in front of you right now that can hook up to the internet. Boom. Fastest VPN in the world. You're not going to get any buffering. You're not going to get any lagging. It's going to stop your ISP from bandwidth throttling, which they do. That's kind of sneaky, especially how much you're paying those guys. There's threat protection to protect you from viruses and malicious malware and whatever else. Unsavory actors are out there. If you want to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. That's nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. Victor Charlie. That link is also going to give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There is no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nice of them, and I appreciate that.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Travel through balloon fight. He also, wait, didn't he get I think he got two of his own games.
There's another
Rosie Ruby Land or whatever.
Yes, that's the one. Yeah. That's the one. I never played it.
Did it even come out over here?
That's a real.
Yeah, it's a real thing. I think
it's most interesting. Tingles Rosie Ruby Land. That's the name of the game.
Oh, Tingle.
Freshly picked Tingles came out, Rosie Ruby.
Yeah. Oh my God. Came out in Japan and Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Is it like a eShop game, or is it something that you or a WiiWare?
No,
game
it got a box release. There's mm-hmm. this like utterly disturbing drawing of him, this like folk drawing of
and
him.
There's like roses around him too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw this at a game shop, and I almost bought it, and then I didn't because I was
you missed out.
You know, I constantly think about it. I should have it.
Recent game was Ripened Tingle's Balloon Trip of Love.
Yes, I imported that game because I have brain problems.
Oh, Tingle.
What was it?
I think it's just a game. It's just Balloon Fight, but with Tingle in it. And he's just like a weird.
And love.
Just, you know.
Because he had Tingle
sexual
Balloon Fight, yes. Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. Thank you for that whole line of games. It wouldn't have been possible without Emo Mora.
I just want to say this has been an absolutely delightful tangent that we have gone. Journey of Tingle Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
I know all the Tingle heads out there are real mad that we just didn't have these facts like off the top of our heads. But
shout out to the while we're doing like the loose uninformed history of Tingle off the top of our heads. Shout out to the Tingle Tuner, which was in
I know
that's a real in Wind Waker. You could plug in a second controller and your drunk friend could run around and basically you use the Game Boy Advance and it worked as a Tingle Tuner, and that means you could do all sorts of magic in the game, like run extra and stuff. It was very weird.
I completely forgot that was a thing.
Mm-hmm. I forgot
hooking up your Game Boy Advance to the GameCube. You could also do that with the Chao Garden with the Sonic Adventure. I'm sorry.
Oh, look,
I don't
it's
know
him
why
again. It's Sonic. We're talking about Sonic.
Bad. Full circle. Full circle, everybody.
We're back at it.
Maybe he made Sonic and we just don't know it. Even more,
also,
just
Zelda
does
Four
everything.
Swords. There we go.
Four Swords. Great game.
Crystal Chronicles, Pac-Man Verse, Animal
Crystal
Crossing.
Chronicles, not a great game. Well, maybe it was on GameCube because
I entered it on GameCube. I don't want to talk about the one they released last year. It's heartbreaking.
That was a bad. That was a bummer. Let's talk about some exciting good news, however, that Casey would be interested in because it's about Monster Hunter. Capcom is releasing what might be some of the rarest amiibo ever made. Again, because they've done this before. These are in
multiple
Japan
times
only gold Monster Hunter Rise amiibo. Now you're probably thinking to yourself, ha, I'm a savvy internet person. I'll just go on eBay like Per Schneider would when he needs a new Joy-Con that just came out in Spain or something. But unfortunately, you have to win these in a lottery from buying the game as a download at the Japanese 7-Eleven stores. Now, I've never been to Japan, as much as it hurts me. That's the dream someday. For those of you who have been, I know, Brian, you've been, Casey, you've been. I'm not sure if you've been, Lily.
No, I want to go next year.
Okay, well, could you explain a little bit about the differences between 7-Eleven? When I think of 7-Eleven in the United States, I think of...
sad.
I think of, yeah, filthy
despair.
Floors.
Yeah,
and I think of a guy hitting another guy with a twisted T in the face. But in Japan, 7-Eleven is more like it's like a department store, maybe, or like describe it?
It's I would say it's more like Nook and Go, if we're going to go with like Animal Crossing terms. But I'll put it this way: 7-Eleven in Japan, you could be like you could bring a date to 7-Eleven Japan. Like there are tables you can sit down and eat dinner at 7-Eleven Japan, they have really good food. Really good kind of fast food or junky kind of comfort food stuff,
like cake sandwiches.
Yeah. What? Yeah.
I love and both of those things. They made them into one thing.
It's super clean. They have like, there's like a whole hot food section that isn't just like different. You know how like everything that 7-Eleven in America sells is like in a tube that on a roller.
Oh yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
And they're just like, oh, it's taquitos full of fish. Like that. Yeah. That's disgusting. But in Japan, like there's like a whole hot food section and you can get fresh sushi and stuff like that. But yeah, they sell, you can buy video games there. There's like a whole magazine section, like manga and stuff like that. And there's also like you can buy like digital cards for games like in the store, which is really cool. Specific like you know, the eShop cards and stuff like that. And so to get these amiibo, you would have to go to Japan, go to 7-Eleven, buy this game.
Okay.
And then that's not even enough. Then hope you win the contest to get them. And so for the record, when we talked about this before, a bunch of us have spent years collecting amiibo. I gave up a long time ago. Once it got too crazy, I was like, what am I doing? Pear never had that moment. So Pear has been buying every single one. And these are some of the only ones he like just straight up just won't be able to get. Like, I mean,
he won't even try.
Yeah.
To get these ones, and basically.
Also, we don't actually know how many of these they will be giving away. But for a comparison, they did something similar with, I think, Mega Man, with a golden Mega Man amiibo. And they only made 10 of those for the lottery.
Ooh.
And also previously, Capcom for Monster Hunter Stories came out with a gold and silver Monster Hunter Stories amiibo, which were given away. But you had to win the Monster Hunter Stories tournament in Japan. So. Oh, damn.
Skill based.
Yeah.
Oh man. I just like what.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna ask: are these like actual gold?
That's I was gonna ask. Are they like, actual like 24 karat gold?
Like, yeah, because I was gonna say, is this real gold? Like, what are we talking here? Yeah.
I just want to know.
I just want to know how much, like, if it's just like painted, you know, painted gold or whatever. Okay, but if it's like real gold, then there's gonna be like less than 10. Like,
yeah,
they can't just be like, oh, we've got like 114 karat gold. No big deal.
So Capcom did come out with real gold and silver Monster Hunter figures for World.
Wow.
That were very expensive.
That is so.
And I may have pondered. But
yeah,
is this a confessional
thing?
Is this a confessional? You want to tell us?
I didn't buy it. I only thought about it. I also thought about buying like the $500 special edition Monster Hunter watch, but I also did not buy that.
Pretty cool.
But I thought about it.
Yeah, I think the closest I ever got were those little pewter wizards at the Hallmark store. I used to be really into those, but I never bought one. So does nobody know what I'm talking about? Okay. You guys have little pewter like dragons and castles and stuff?
Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah, I used to love those, but I never bought them. That's the closest I would buy to a full metal figurine of precious pewter.
So the gold edition Mega Man amiibo came with the collector's edition or legacy collection
I have
of 3DS. That is not real gold.
No, neither was the gold Mario.
So is this not Mario. This is not what I was thinking about then. Because this they would have made a bunch of these. So just kidding, like I reneged on that. What did I read that? I didn't just make it up out of thin air.
Maybe it was one of those things where somebody, like every now and then, like a Saudi prince will have something, like a solid gold PS5 will be made for the Prince of Saudi Arabia.
It's the Mega Man 11 amiibo. So there have been two different gold Mega Man amiibo.
Oh, wait, yeah.
I didn't know that there were two of them.
And one of them was real gold?
No, I don't think either of them were real gold.
Painted gold. I just assume it's just painted gold.
Well, you can always use some painter's tape on the base and then get some really nice gold spray paint and then hit that with a sealer. And then you got some gold.
Show your ID when you buy the gold spray paint, unfortunately.
Yeah, make sure to bring take your parents to me too.
Yeah, because it's also the favorite among people who abuse inhalants.
I've also been carded for trying to buy an energy drink before, so I didn't know that was a thing.
Wow. Well, I don't know how to transition to talking about Kingdom of Amalur Re-Reckoning. Has anyone?
There's really nothing. I don't think anyone in the world could have figured that bridge.
Speaking of gold, kingdoms and stuff.
Getting warmer.
Hey, you know what else is really intoxicating? Kingdoms of Amalur Re-Reckoning is announced for Nintendo Switch. coming to Switch March 16th. There's a physical edition. This is the remastered version of 2012's Kingdom of Amalur that was released on PS4, Xbox One, and PC in 2020. The re-release was 2020. And this remaster includes all the DLC. And there is, I believe I saw this morning, a physical edition coming that looks pretty sharp. Does anyone on the panel have any experience with Kingdoms of Amalur?
Oh, I played
a bit of it, and I'm going to go back and finish this someday, because it was one of those things where I played like the first 3 hours and I was like, okay, I dig this. And then a million other things happened and life went on, and it's been like 12 years.
Yeah, same. But I borrowed
it's been so long that look at our graphics there, like for IGN's video. Yeah, it's ancient.
Wow.
That's when Perry used to just write all the scores out on cardboard and spray paint and hold them up for the camera. That's how old that is.
He was wearing a green screen suit.
That's not true. No. I really want to play this. I'm glad this is coming to Switch too. This is a really interesting game because it's like I believe the state of Rhode Island funded this.
This is the Kurt Schilling game.
Yes.
The hero to all of New England in 2002.
Somewhat controversial figure
later on down the road. But hey, man, we waited a long time. Or excuse me, it was 2004 is when they won the World Series. For the first time since 1919, and the curse of the Bay was lifted. Oh, kid, I could talk about the Sox for friggin' ever, dude. But that has nothing to do with Kingdoms of Amalur. This is a game that everyone says that I would really like. And so I'm kind of interested in checking it out, but March 16th is about 3 weeks after Bravely Default 2 comes out, and I know that game is going to take all of my time and attention, so
yeah, it's also the week before Monster Hunter Rise comes out, so
a no from Casey.
Sorry.
It's fine. I mean, it's also a good deal. You get all the DLC, apparently.
I really liked, so I'm kind of in the same boat with Brian, where I played a little bit of it. I played maybe like 5 or 6 hours, but I was borrowing it from a friend and then was like, I'll go back to it eventually. I'll buy it when it's on sale later down the road. And then that never happened.
Yeah.
But I liked what I played. Do I remember? No, I just remember general feelings that I had.
That's totally fine. Yeah. You get the gist of it.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a pretty cool RPG.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would play it. Maybe I'd play it.
Kurt Schilling was a big World of Warcraft fan back in the day. And so it was kind of a surprise to find out that the guy who, you know, helped lift the curse was also like a huge World of Warcraft player. I think he even like was in some of their ad campaigns. So he's a big time gamer. And then he got, the state of Rhode Island, like Brian brought up, had a program where they were trying to encourage game developers to come to Rhode Island and make games, open a studio. So he opened up 34 studios. I'm probably misremembering that because that was his number.
Oh, 38.
Or 38. Yes, thank you. I was thinking of 38 studios because that was his number when he played for the Boston Red Sox all those years ago. Legendary. The Red Sox himself. I don't know where I was going. I just got so excited thinking about that time. I fell to my knees. My whole life had been leading to that moment. And all the old people in Maine died the next year because they were, that's all they were holding out for. I'm not even joking. It was horrible. But where was I going with this? Oh yeah.
What?
None of us have any idea whatsoever.
Yay.
Yeah.
Excited about Boston Red Sox. You ever been to Fenway? It's unbelievable. The history.
Yes, I have.
Sonic again.
I went
to a PAX East and I toured the stadium.
Nice.
I will say it's kind of sad that 38 Studios was after this game went bank. They filed for bankruptcy.
Yeah, I almost think that this game was sold off to another studio, like maybe THQ Nordic.
Oh, THQ Nordic is doing the remaster. Okay, which is not surprising. They normally do the remasters for stuff, right? Like Battle for Bikini Bottom and everything.
Oh yeah.
But I was like, oh, I kind of want to, I hope it does well so that, you know, the people who worked on it back in the day could like see it, you know, thrive again.
The fact that it's coming to Switch, I think speaks to its popularity on the other consoles. And also because everybody has a Switch and they're like, let's make some money. Boy. an early build of one of the best video games of all time, which was, of course, Zelda Ocarina of Time, has been found, in which Link could turn into Navi.
That's cool. So weird.
That doesn't make any sense. The early... This is why I'm not hosting anymore. I can't even talk. Unless it's about the Boston Red Sox, just not like the Hedgehog. The early build revealed an in-progress look at Kakariko Village, an early archery test, and that Link could have turned into Navi via the Soul Medallion, which would have significantly shook things up a little bit. Other medallions would have let him cast and dispel fire at will, warp when in danger, and in more. Some of the translated text also hints at that the story of the Ocarina of Time originally played out a bit differently. One says that the Deku Tree was set to be a prison for fairies where Link would have to go and free Navi. That's
dark.
That is, yeah. Instead, they're like, that's a little too dark. Hey, how about this? The Deku Tree dies immediately. That's a much better way to do things in this game. Brian, did you take a look at any of this early build stuff?
Yeah, it's super cool. I believe it's the Space World demo, which was like one of the first, I think the first time we saw or people saw this game. And it's odd because this is so old. This is like, you know, back when Pear used to have to hold up scores. They would like basically the screenshots you got for games during this era were like photographs of televisions.
Yeah,
that they uploaded, and so all we really
like hood that they would put over a TV and take cameras of it.
All we really had to go on for, you know, at the time, what we thought was Zelda 64, the title of the game, was just like a handful of screenshots. And fans have been like wondering for years what was in that build, how we could get more on it. Like, I think there might be like some, you know, off-screen shaky cam footage of some of the stuff in this, but to like actually have the cart that it's on, like, and keep in mind, this is not part of like that big Giga leak that happened recently.
Right.
This is just like, this is one of those weird, I don't know if you've seen the N64 dev carts. They're like a foot tall.
It looks like somebody used the clone tool in Photoshop. And
yeah, they just like stretched it out. But no, it's super cool. Like, it's obviously it's not like a, you know, fully playable version of the game, but it has unused areas and ideas and assets and stuff like that that nobody's ever seen before. And it's sort of like, it's, you know, like there's that deleted scene from A New Hope where like Luke Skywalker's at like Tashi's station buying power converters and stuff. There's that other one from Return of the Jedi where he's like building his lightsaber in that cave. Like, little things like that go a long way with fans who have been so obsessed with this particular thing for so long, but sort of like depleted every inch of it in terms of what they know and what they've experienced. So to find like even a little slice of Ocarina of Time that nobody's ever seen before is really, really special. And so, yeah, I hope they keep digging into the code and seeing what they can pull out of it.
Yeah. Lily, do you have fond memories of Ocarina of Time?
I played it way later. Actually, funny enough, my first Zelda game was Majora's Mask when I was 9.
That's a weird way to play it, but you were not.
Yeah, it was a weird time, you know? I didn't really understand who Mario or Zelda was or anybody, honestly.
Who does like, now, though, really? Like, I still don't really.
I don't know. I had a
really hard time opening up and talking to people.
I don't even know what being outside my room is. I live here now. Yeah. But I thought it was really cool. I mean, I agree. I think it's always super fun when there are fans who truly love a game, but there's not much to grasp on or to research or look into. So something like this just kind of like reignites that excitement. And it's kind of fun because when it comes to Ocarina of Time, like everyone just loves that game so much. So even people who aren't as big of fans can at least enjoy this idea of like an early build and kind of assess it. I do think it's kind of weird, though, that like other medallions can like let you cast to do fire or like warp out of danger, but this specific one turns you into Navi. Mm-hmm. That's like why?
Yeah.
Why? So I just think that's a bit weird. But I want to know what they were going for. Like, I just want to know, like, what was the story? Like, besides the story being like, oh, this is a prison for fairies. Like, besides that, where are we going with it? What's the journey like? Like, what? Right. Where was it going to go? Like, how does this tie into what Majora's Mask? Because, right, they're like kind of sequels together. Like, how would this have tied into Majora's Mask, if at all? That's kind of what I'm thinking. But That's just kind of like how my brain worked.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's like they pivoted and they were like, every elf gets a fairy or whatever. And instead of they're just like, there's a tree full of fairies, free them.
They're all going to die.
Like, they're all going to die.
Yeah, if the whole game was full of like levels that were just like had fairy prisons in them, like that would have been really weird.
Yeah, Naveen's Princess Peach in this game.
Mm-hmm.
But they reused that idea for Majora's Mask, because if you remember the dungeons in Majora's Mask, you had to find
fairies. Yeah,
you had to find the fairies inside of all the dungeons to put together the great fairy. So maybe they reused that idea.
Mm-hmm. Nintendo. Famous for reusing ideas. Like somebody found this toy from the 60s. It was like a dollhouse set that Nintendo made back when they were a toy manufacturer, and the design of the houses. It's like almost one-to-one to the design of the houses in Animal Crossing now. Like they just take whatever they did that didn't work maybe the first time, and then they just reuse it in a more like, so I'd say that's entirely possible. I mean, I'm just happy to see something about Ocarina of Time where it's not like somebody found a new way to warp through a data table in the binary code.
Yes.
Shave 1 millisecond off the
speed world. Speed run.
Yeah.
Speed run.
That is all. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I absolutely love how everybody just can break this game into a million pieces and find the most unbelievable ways without even having access to like actually seeing the code. They're able to just blow this game to pieces. But like finding something historical like this with something so weird that Link would turn into Navi is just, it's very cool. It's refreshing.
I will say, like, I really, really hope that Ocarina of Time comes to Switch eventually.
Oh my God, but yes.
Even more than that, I don't know if you all remember the weird master mode or whatever it was that
master
came
quest?
Out for game. The Master Quest.
Yeah.
Yeah, they came out for GameCube. And so for me, as somebody who had played through Ocarina of Time like 100 times, to get to play that version, which was ostensibly the same overworld, but like completely remixed dungeons, was so cool and so weird. Because I'm a huge fan of like the original Legend of Zelda had like a second quest. So they did the same thing for Ocarina of Time. And I believe it was only released in Japan.
Oh,
yeah. It was a 64DD game, but it came to America via that collection that had, I think, Ocarina of Time. And was it just Ocarina of Time and the Master Quest? Because I know there was also another one that had Ocarina, Majora, Zelda 1, and Zelda 2.
Yeah.
I think I still have that.
Power Collectors, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think I still have that case. Because that's the way I played it, was getting that set. What a fun time.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. Like, even down to, like, Ganon's castle at the very end is just a completely like architecturally it is the same like room by room structurally, but when you walk into each area the puzzles are completely remixed. There's traps and enemies in different places. Like it's completely like a brand new experience dungeon wise. I really hope they give players another chance to play that, because like it's super cool and it's hidden in time on a GameCube disc.
Away. You probably used to be able to get for $5 at GameStop, but not anymore. Casey, did you have something you were trying to say?
I'm just looking up that Legend of Zelda Collector's Edition for the GameCube
on eBay,
the promotional disc, and it's $124 now.
Ooh. Wow.
Dang. Oh, man. Was that the one that you had to send away to Nintendo Power for, or was that the one that you got with?
I thought this was in the Nintendo Power one.
Yeah.
Okay. Because there was also one that you got from pre-ordering Wind Waker.
Wind Waker. I have that one. That one is for a while, I think, was the only way to play Ocarina of Time outside of the N64 until they came out with the 3DS version.
Yes.
Yeah. Which you got Master Quest with something that had to do with Wind Waker, right? I don't know why. I don't know why I'm bringing this up. I'm sorry. I don't remember.
No. You're totally right.
Obviously.
To Google, everybody. Google.
Sorry. I was just like mourning. I think about it sometimes. I left it at my friend's house and she sold it to
the worst. Well, let's talk about what we've been playing. I don't know. Casey, are you all right?
I'm fine.
You guys were right. Master Quest was available on special bonus discs that contained the original Ocarina of Time. Disc was given out in limited quantities with pre-orders of Wind Waker. This is via zelda.gamepedia.com.
Cool.
Shout out to them. And so not only was that like really hard to get, you had to pre-order a game specifically and in limited quantity. Like this is like getting those gold Monster Hunter amiibo. Like what? Why is it so, like, you should be able to play this? This should be released in wide quantities for everybody to play on Switch.
Well, hey, it is the 35th anniversary of Zelda, so maybe they'll throw a little curveball. We've all been expecting a 3D collection. Maybe that'll be part of it. The Master Ocarina of Time Master Quest. I would like it if they just ported the 3DS version over, because that one is really good and very competent, and I've played it. The last time I played Ocarina of Time was on the 3DS, so it's a good version. I recommend it. But we're not talking about what I played in the past. We're talking about what we played now. Casey, what have you been playing? Now that you're back at work,
can you guess? I've been playing a little bit of the Monster Hunter Rise demo.
Excellent.
Man, I really like it. Some of the weapons. So I've only tried a couple. I've used the sword and shield, the lance, the bow, and the hunting horn. And the bow is very different. I need to figure that out. But the hunting horn has been entirely, maybe not totally 100% different, but the way that you play songs to buff your allies is completely different and much easier and more streamlined to understand it and start using it right away. And it actually, I think, had some of the highest damage per second output of any other weapon in the demo, which is really cool. Also really enjoyed Sword and Shield. It's very similar, but there are tweaks for every weapon that make it feel a little bit fresh and newer, and you have to like relearn some combos that you might have relied on in World to make it better in Rise. But I'm really liking the direction this is going. Wave and Riding is a new mechanic that replaces the mount mechanic that's been in Monster Hunter since Monster Hunter 4, I believe, or 3. I actually don't remember. One of those two. But it's really cool. You see it up on the screen if you're watching on YouTube now, and there are two different ways to get it into the state. I'll stop getting into details of it. But
no, it's refreshing because like you've been gone, we're like, yeah, Monster Hunter, you sharpen your bugle and you punch him dragon.
You do gotta sharpen your hammer in Monster Hunter, so you might you might have to sharpen your. But
Casey, we missed you so much that this is actually comforting. This level level of mundane.
So it's but Wyvern Riding is pretty. It's pretty gimmicky, but it is so cool. It is awesome to take control of another monster, and you do have basically full control over it. It's not just an automatic, okay, like you're on a monster, it's going to do its thing for a while. You control where it goes, you control whether you're doing light or heavy attacks, you can make it run into a wall and then quickly press a button to like recover so that you can do it again and make it like run into walls over and over before it like falls down, or you can keep attacking with it and build up a meter so you can do an ultimate attack on another monster if there is another monster around. So a very common tactic I was seeing people, I'm not sure if they were using this specifically, but people would go and start with and riding a different monster and then bring it to the main monster to attack it with, which was really cool.
That is smart.
And you can either activate
cool control. Are you talking like finances? You're DNR.
Yeah. I mean, we did learn that monsters have insurance in this game now, because when you're attacking this game has voiceover now. And when you're attacking it, sometimes your character says, "Hope you have insurance." And
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real thing.
It's a real thing.
I hope your deductible's low.
Yeah. Oh God. It's not. Like they just like go, I don't know, into the sea, just remove themselves from society, right? With those insults. That's how I feel about it.
I feel like you should do a video or write an article exploring this. Like what does insurance
look like? Does Geico just call up all the insurance companies and do you cover?
Like, who is selling these poor monsters insurance?
I know.
I don't know.
Bill
from finance. Murdered, right? Have you been playing anything else? I mean, obviously that was the big one, and we're all so glad that all like everything converged together that you could come back and talk about Monster Hunter at the same time. But what else have you been playing?
I tried to play Hitman 3 yesterday on the Switch, but my internet at my current residence is not great. I have about a I don't know, I just tested it and it was 20 download, 20 upload. So not great. And I couldn't play Hitman 3
Bummer.
On the Switch. The first time I tried
it would probably be faster to like at physically mail you videos of somebody else playing Hitman than it would be to stream on 20.
I tried to play it part of my, like, without doing anything else, but it didn't work. And I actually tried to stream it and that definitely didn't work. But I'm not blaming Hitman 3 because I have played other streaming games on the Switch with my better internet and it worked totally fine. So it's definitely my internet and not the game. But I also, because Hitman 3 didn't work, I went to playing Monster Sanctuary, which just came out this month, which I had so much fun with. It is. Yeah.
What is this game? Could you describe it a little bit?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember which, if it's 8-bit or 6, I think it's 8-bit, 16-bit.
Those are my two favorite kinds of bits.
Yeah, those are your two favorite kind of bits. It's good to hear. So it is a side-scrolling adventure. Here, you can see it on the screen if you're watching our YouTube now, where you fight monsters and collect them. And each monster actually has a different overworld ability that lets you access different parts of the map, which is really cool. And you can have a party of up to 6, but you can only battle with up to 3 at a time. So when you're in the overworld, you're traveling, side-scrolling, and then you'll encounter a monster and then start a turn-based battle against it. There is a lot to the RPG mechanisms. There are full-on skill trees for every single monster, and there are passive abilities. There are the attacks, obviously. You can upgrade your attacks. You can get buffs. There's a bunch of different things you can get. Each monster also has a slot for a weapon and 4 different accessories, I think, if I'm remembering this correctly. But man, it was really cool. And the way that you catch monsters in this game is a little bit different. Every time you battle, you get a star ranking on how well you did in the battle. Mm-hmm. And the higher the ranking of your battle, the more likely you will get a rare drop, whether that be a rare item or an egg of that monster. And then you go into your inventory and like open the egg and then you can add it to your party. I was having a lot of fun with it. It was very cool. And there are teleporters set around that let you teleport to different areas. And there's evolution and like all that stuff.
My God.
I'm going to keep playing this game.
This game sounds... I'm almost certain this is part of the New Year sale in the eShop, actually, which ends, if you're listening to this on Thursday, it ends tonight. But everything you've said about this, like when you said, oh, it's 8 or 16-bit, I was like, I'm listening. And then everything after that was like exactly what I like about video games. So I'm definitely going to have to check this one out. Lily, yes. What have you been playing?
Real quick. Also available on Game Pass if you have if you have Xbox.
Well, I have Game Pass.
All right.
There it is.
Unless you want to play it on the Switch.
It's like, unless you want to play on the Switch.
I also like
or por qué no los dos, you know? Why not get both ones? Yeah. I mean, why not? Anyway, I played Splatoon 2 this past weekend. Because they did the Splatfest, which was Super Mushroom versus Superstar for Mario 35.
I didn't even know you played Splatoon. That's interesting.
Yeah. I'm back for one specific reason. It's to talk about Splatoon. That's why.
There's nothing wrong.
It's been 3 years. I'm back. But I played Splatfest this weekend. It was really fun. I hadn't played in a while, and I picked Superstar. The majority of people, I think like 66 around that number, picked Superstar. Yet we lost. So Super Mushroom won. They won the solo and the team groups because online is on Splatoon. If there's not enough teams on the other side, you just play against other Superstar people. It was an interesting. I just remembered how much I love Splatoon and also how much I wish the quality of life was better on it, because there's a lot of things on it that need to be improved. We won't dive into that until Splatoon 3 comes out, and then
we'll have you back.
I will attack it at full force.
Excellent.
But yeah, I played that over the weekend and it was super fun. I forgot how much I enjoyed the weapons and just like the overall mobility of it.
Yeah.
And I was like, dang. Really hoping for Splatoon 3 now at this point.
Hey, they haven't said anything. The Splatooniverse has been very quiet lately. So
yeah, I mean, Animal Crossing came out. That guy probably is free, I hope. So
that's also true. So,
Sir Gami, please.
Fingers crossed for Splatoon 3. Brian, have you been playing any video games?
I've been playing a lot of video games. I guess sort of more diagonally connected to Switch, but I played a ton of Hitman, which I love. I haven't tested the cloud version out yet, but I did get a code for it, so I will give that a shot. Please go check that out, even if you've never played the Hitman games before. Yep. It's just super fun. I would say if you've ever been scared off by this franchise because it seems like you have to be a perfectionist, you don't. That's the best part about it. Like, I went in all loosey-goosey, and it's like a stealth game gone dumb for me, which I have so much fun with because I have great plans on how to assassinate the evil men, and then everything falls apart, and I end up hiding inside like a big crate for an hour dressed as a butler, only to get out and like throw an apple at a guy. It's a great
that
time.
Yeah, all of that is true.
And just this morning I played through Donut County on Game Pass, also on Switch. Adored it. It's you can finish it in about 2 hours. It's a very chill quasi puzzle game, basically about a giant portable hole that goes underneath objects and inhales them, and the more it eats, the bigger it gets. It's very chill, very laid back. It's got a little bit of sort of like Katamari vibes, a little bit, I would say, like kind of Luigi's Mansion-ish in terms of just like cleaning up everything around you. And it's just really, really charming. And I really, really love it. And lastly, I'm playing a game that I cannot talk about until next week, but I cannot wait to talk about.
Fun.
Oh, because I think I know what game you're playing, so I cannot wait to talk about it. That has me very excited, because I really want to play this game too. But fortunately, I wasn't quick enough to speak up about it, but that's fine.
It is. Well, I'll tell you later, but yes.
All right. We'll be like that. Guess what I've been playing? Contra for the NES.
Yay!
Yeah!
Because this is what happened was we were talking about the Contra collection, the anniversary collection. It was on sale. And I said, you know what? I am going to add that officially to my collection on Switch. And then I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to play through it because that is the absolute video game comfort food for me. I don't play through it on 9 lives. I put the Konami code in every time because I don't care, because it's not what it's about. It's about like me being 12 years old at a sleepover at my friend James's house. He's got his controller, I've got my controller, and that's just how we spent like 45 minutes before we would watch like 3 horror VHSs, and I wouldn't be able to sleep, and I'd call my parents at midnight and wake them up and tell them that I wanted to come home. But that
trying to be alive.
Yeah, what a great time. But that collection, if you haven't checked it out, it is an M2 joint and should absolutely be part of your collection. I'm not sure if it's still on sale, but it has a lot of Contra games. It has the Japanese version of Contra, which has like animated backgrounds and little cutscenes that are in Japanese, so they're useless to me. But you get to see a big pixelated muscly man talking on a radio, like doing one of these numbers, like the flex. So that's worth the price of admission.
The Konami collections in general on Switch are great. There's also an awesome one for Castlevania, which only really covers like the early part of that franchise. And then there's also another one, I forget what it's called, but it has a bunch of like old shmups. It's got like Gradius and Life Force and stuff like
that. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, but I can't.
Those are all great. I really hope those collections get sequels, especially the Castlevania one, because then they can start getting into like the later ones. And
I want those DS ones. I just want a collection.
Dude, yeah, right?
They're so good.
They're so good.
And also, as promised last week, as Tom looked it up, the Sega Genesis collection was on sale, so I bought that, and I've been, you know, just revisiting my youth. I played Hitman 3 also, but, you know, I didn't play it on Switch, so I don't feel it's fair to talk about that. So I'm not going to, other than to say that Brian is right. You can hit a man with some grapes right in his eye, and he'll fall down and hide him in a dumpster. So it's just like an open, like a sandbox. So I think in the review, they call it a sandbox murder simulator. So.
Oh, that sounds fun.
It's fun. It's not what I was expecting at all. I was expecting to like be running around and shooting and hiding. Instead, you're just like, you're walking around and you trick a guy to come into the bathroom and you punch him in the face and you steal his uniform. And,
nice.
Yep. That's
you can also give him a stomach bug and then he'll go in the bathroom on his own.
Yep.
A lot of options, really.
It's crazy.
Choose your own murder adventure.
Yeah. It's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Your own
murder adventure.
I'd want to play this game. I'll probably download it.
Check it out. I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
We're going to hit the question block real quick because we're almost out of time, because I was talking about the Red Sox and Sonic so much. So I apologize.
Sorry.
I'm just excited. That's all.
Sonic has red shoes.
He He does have red shoes, but he has white socks, and that's Chicago. Jeez. Patrick Coppins asks, what's your Nintendo blind spot? Is there a big series that's just passed you by? And I'm going to say that the Fire Emblem series passed me by until Three Houses, and then I got Three Houses, and I realized that I didn't really like, I remembered that I don't really like strategy RPGs. So that's my blind spot, Fire Emblem. But Casey, do you have a big Nintendo blind spot?
F-Zero. I've never played an F-Zero game.
Really?
Yeah, if you don't count the ones on Nintendo Land.
Those are good.
Or using Captain Falcon in Smash. Yeah, I've never played an F-Zero game.
Well, kind of hard to go back and revisit. Lily, do you have any Nintendo blind spots?
Actually, I'm the same as Casey, F-Zero. Yeah.
Well, I guess we got to have a special episode where you guys just play F-Zero. And the blind spot's gone. And you're like, ah, this might have been fun 25 years ago. I still love the original F-Zero. I still play it every few months. But Brian, is there? I mean, I feel like it's impossible for you because you've been doing this a long time. You have to have had played every Nintendo game possible.
Well, no, I mean, most of them, but I'm with you on Fire Emblem. It's just, I totally missed it. I mean, it was hard to not miss it growing up because it was exclusive to Japan. But once it came here, I was like in the same boat. I that's not really my genre, and I didn't really get into it. And they started making Amiibo and putting all the people in Smash, and I was like, what's happening? Who is everyone here?
Who is
like, I feel like if I was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, I could get a couple of dollars faking my way through Pokemon. Like, I've played enough Pokemon games here and there to get it. I saw the movie or several movies. I understand that series a lot more, but like, if you put seven people from Fire Emblem in front of me, I wouldn't understand them. I wouldn't know their names.
Who are you? I said Marth, and isn't Marth from Xenogears or Xenosaga?
Wait. He's from Yes.
What?
Which series is Marth from?
Fire Emblem.
Okay.
Marth is what Darth Maul's friends called him in high school. That's all I know.
The Marth Man. Marth Nader.
No, the Xeno games, same deal. I did our video review I don't know if you guys caught that, but last year, like, I basically got a Slack message that was frantically like, hey, can you do the VO for this review? And there was a typo in it that said, I think it said like Duncan, and I said his name wrong. And that went out on the website, and I had a lot of very, very cross people in my mentions. That was bad. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's okay. No, it's all right. I'm still here.
Yeah, things happen. There it is. James,
and this is why we have anxiety about reading VO about something.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That Mulan movie review. I don't know how to pronounce any of these names.
That's why I always say, I'm going to mess this up. And that absolves me of all sins. No one will be mad about it to me at all. So ever, ever, never. But James Donilon asks, what is one of your favorite memories being on the NVC podcast? And I'm going to say this show right here. This episode specific.
Yeah.
The show is now. You said this show, and I was like, oh, the whole show in general.
I meant specifically right now, 1 hour, 6 minutes, 57 seconds into the show. Favorite memory.
Really, I don't know if you remember this. I don't know if this was around your era. I don't know if you were on the episode specifically, but we were in the middle of recording a show in the IGN studio and a fire alarm went off.
Yes. Yeah. I remember this.
And we were talking to each other. Everybody was just kind of like, yeah, Nintendo. And all of a sudden it was like, rare, rare. And then just hard cut to me looking dead in the camera, like,
I just remember. The live stream, and then later everyone left, and then I think it was Destined came in and was like, hey guys, on the live stream, there was a fire alarm.
Yeah, that was super funny. So that's number one for me. And then my runner-up is hosting the Nintendo Switch reveal episode of NVC, which is like a live stream where we were all looking at our phones waiting for them to go up for pre-order. And I think like Pear or Alana was talking, and they're just like, oh, the Nintendo Switch seems really cool and it's fun for the whole family, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh my God, you can pre-order it right now. And I was just ignoring them. And I'm like, got it. Yeah. Like, so that was fun.
Casey, what about you?
I have so many MVC memories. It's so difficult to pinpoint just one. And I don't know if this counts. It's not technically the podcast, but it was an MVC specific Let's Play where we were able to play the new Mario Party for the Switch early. And it was Mizak, Brian, and Pear. And I was on a team with Pear. And it was so fun and just really funny. Just thinking about it makes me laugh. It was a great time.
There was also the time you made me a Pokemon to eat.
Yes. What? Okay. That one. That's the best one. I made an Alchemy.
Yeah. Casey handed me this like 7-inch tall, like it was like whipped cream and cake.
Ooh.
And she was here. Yeah. I brought this for you. And I was like, are you kidding me? And it was like one of the best things I've ever eaten. My whole face was like buzzing for like the whole episode. I was like, what is great? It was awesome.
That's lovely.
Edible Pokemon.
I mean, I think all Pokemon are technically edible, except for maybe the poison types.
Okay. I mean, if not you really try.
I mean, what is it? Like those puffer fish are poisonous, but we still kind of eat them.
You can eat them, it'll make your lips real tingly because of the
poison. Yeah, or you could die, you know.
Or you could die. It's a crapshoot.
Yeah, 50-50.
I mean, what is life without a little bit of risk?
Episodes.
Yeah. That's true.
Well, I'm sad to say we're out of time, but thank you all for being here. Casey, welcome back. We're so excited to have you back. Monster Hunter needed you now more than ever. Lily, thank you for coming back.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
The cast. Brian, you're always here. But thanks anyway, pal. Happy you're around. But that is it. That is all the time we have this week's NBC. If you want to hear this week's listener questions, that's something that I forgot to edit out because you just heard this week's listener questions. And I meant to edit that out last week as well. But you can listen to this podcast on any of your favorite podcasting platforms like Spotify. To submit your own questions, write to us at nbc@ign.com or respond to our weekly question block post on the Nintendo Voice Chat forums on Facebook. Thank you so much for watching. And Casey, NVC is the only place where you can
get the thing.
Yes. We did it.
Welcome back.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.